Jerry, good morning.
Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Tell me what you saw and what you heard from the early time period at the party when you didn't know what was going to happen until it was realized that Verge was going to be the Democratic candidate.
Well, as you know, we went into it with the polling putting us out in front, so there was high expectation, and there was no one in the House disappointed. In fact, we were excited about the breadth of the margin as that expanded from the last poll on Monday. So it was a very upbeat. Verge did a great job addressing the crowd, was graceful and gracious in regards to his opponent, Mr. Dillon, and it was just a great night had by all.
Jerry,
got home just a couple hours ago.
Jerry, I thought that victory speech for the primary almost sounded to me like he had won the governor's job because he had a plan that he wanted to place. He talked about what he was going to do. I think firmly in his mind he believes not only is he going to win, but he knows exactly what he's going to do from day one.
Well, I'm certain he didn't get in it to finish second. So I think that was warm up and hit the second wind, and it's going to be a heck of a campaign. So those of us who were there, many of us have known him since he was a county commissioner, and it's an exciting time and an exciting opportunity for Michigan.
Well, Jerry, your union supported Verge. I want you to step away from that. Jerry, I've said this many times, you're one of the smartest guys I know, and you don't jump on bandwagons, and you really give some thought before you really get behind a candidate or an issue. What did you see in Verge? What makes you feel that he should be the next governor for the state?
Well, I'll set aside my personal biases and speak from, first of all, from the position I hold as the Association Teacher President and with my colleagues across the state. We represent the bread and butter of America. We represent the middle class, the educators of the middle class, and quite frankly, the educators of all class in public school. And what Virgil represents is kind of the epiphany of that. He is a strong political advocate for the middle class first. That is his first priority. And we had an opportunity to see him on behalf of our UAW brothers and sisters, with our AFL-CIO affiliates, the other unions in Lansing, on a very personal level as he's worked through the tough political issues, the tough financial issues, and at the same time has stayed above the fray, has worked at keeping workers working, and working with their respective leadership groups and keeping as much labor peace in challenging times as possible. As you know, we've had a few bites at that apple of challenges, and he's been respectful to all sides in the educational world. At the same time, he's got an inside advisor and his wife, a public education leader in the Lansing School District, and all around, he is what we're about.
Jerry, I know you can't speak for Verge Bonero, but is a line being drawn in the sand, the rich versus the middle class?
Well, anybody watching the demographics of our society and the separating of the two classes that we're evolving into would recognize that, and it's part of that, obviously, from an economist perspective, is the leveling the playing field of the globe. We are certainly, when our manufacturing shift, we are adding opportunities to a number of third world countries and helping to improve their economy and to a degree at the expense of ours. There's a lot of us are concerned about what's happening as the resources and wealth of our nation is being more and more concentrated in a smaller portion of the population and the declining of that middle class. And there's no better place to observe that in public education, where we have all walks of life coming through. And it is an alarming thing. And our generation, Tony, your children are going to live with the fallout of that as we continue to see the standing of the middle class deteriorate.
We're talking with Jerry Swartz, who is the president of the LSEA. You're listening to the Tony Connolly Morning Show on 1320 WILS. Jerry, I wanted to get your take on the new Michigan Supreme Court ruling that says teachers have standing to sue school districts because it did not follow.
The position taken by the association was obviously upheld by the Supreme Court. We expected that it would. We're pleased that they did. It's really a relatively simple matter of law. The legislature intended to take some of the politics out of disruptive behavior in students, specifically assaultive behavior. And when the legislature wrote that law and put it into effect nearly a decade ago now, the expectation was that it would have made it less political. It would have effectuated automatic consequences for very specific behaviors, it didn't do that out of hand. There were a number of instances in this particular case, four instances, where the association and the members that we represent believed that the action required by law was not executed by the school board and administration, and took it to task, and that's the issue that was at hand. And it was dismissed. It was dismissed by the lower court, the Court of Appeals, and the frustration of that was, well, I guess we have to go back to the legislature. Well, we had not exhausted this avenue, and the Supreme Court has now answered, no, there is an avenue here in the courts to address the legal obligations of school boards specific to assault on teachers and volunteers in public schools.
Jerry, what is the process? If a student does assault a teacher, aide, or volunteer, what's the process?
Well, throughout the state, this is has a target, a little bit of discussion around Lansing, but this is not unique to Lansing. In fact, Lansing does a pretty good job at the addressing disruptive students. But the legislature was very broad and very specific in that they said, when there's an assault on a staff or a volunteer, it's not limited to just teachers, but it's school employees and or school employee volunteers who are volunteering on the school grounds or in a school function. And its intention is to provide a layer of protection against students who may be inclined to exhibit assaultive behavior. And it's a mandatory expulsion for sixth graders and above, a mandatory, no option, of a minimum of 180 days, which is very harsh. It was back when the zero tolerance era was really out there, that we're not going to put up with it anymore. Well, as an employee, former employee in public schools, zero tolerance rules are very challenging for people who are involved in the direct services to youngsters who are in crisis. So zero tolerance policies are problematic on their face, but nonetheless, it was the law that was passed by the legislature and what we're dealing with today. The outcome of that is the board is obligated. They're required to move forward with an expulsion when an assault has occurred. And in the four instances cited in this case, the administration and or the school board determined that it had not risen to the level of assault. The individual teachers and the association representing them, myself specifically as their president, disagreed with that interpretation, and we wanted it to be heard by a less partial body.
All right, Jerry, I've got to get to break. I know we're going to be talking to you soon as school starts. Thank you so much. Enjoy your day.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks, Brittany.